Today on Wings, Radical Futures Roundtable.
I think the fact that we can imagine radical futures is already a huge richness that we have. The fact that our imaginations haven't been stopped, corrupted, is already, I think, a huge feminist contribution to the world.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I'm Sofia Vavarutzos, reporting for Wings. The clip you just heard was Maria Alejandra Escalante speaking about feminist contributions to the world and the movements within it. On September 25th, 2020, the Women's Environment and Development Organization, or WEDO, hosted a virtual roundtable discussion featuring feminist climate activists. The discussion, called Radical Futures Roundtable, Young Climate Feminists in Conversation, focused on those perspectives on climate change and where to go from here. Panelists Sanam Amin, Frances Roberts Gregory, Maggie Mapondera, Maria Alejandra Escalante, and Patricia Miranda Watimena, and moderators Mara Dolan and Andrea Vega Troncoso all come from different parts of the world. And these feminists were all drawn to climate activism work for a reason unique from each other.
For me, it started with wanting to write and tell stories from the time I was 11 or 12 years old.
Sanam Amin, from Bangladesh, got into climate work through a career as a journalist and documentary filmmaker.
I actually studied literature for my undergraduate degree, but then that translated into my first job in journalism and then into doing documentary film work in Bangladesh. Doing that gave me the opportunity to travel all around the country and really see and learn how the landscape, the weather, the agriculture, the animals, population in the forest are all changing.
Beginning with interviewing survivors of sexual violence and wartime rape, Amin eventually began working with communities impacted by climate violence and climate crises.
So, a few years into this, when I moved into civil society organizing work, which included both the advocacy and the communications work, you didn't have to tell me that climate change was happening or that it was hurting poor communities more or that it was affecting women differently. Every time we have a climate disaster in Bangladesh, the rate of child marriage jumps up because communities are more vulnerable, and that's an extra mouth to feed if there's a daughter who's unmarried in the house. And women and girls worldwide are the ones who are collecting or pumping water, then carrying it home, boiling it, filtering it, and storing it at home. So once I moved into this activism work, not just climate, but human rights work, labor organizing, I've found myself telling policymakers more than once that the objective shouldn't be to make it easier for women to do the domestic work, the care work. You don't use your uterus to collect the water. So why shouldn't we talk about what we need to do to share work, which is, of course, the principle behind redistributing care work? And then from lived experience, it's very obvious. Coming from a global south country, Bangladesh, that didn't contribute to the pollution that led to the climate change, and yet that's the country that's going to go under in a very short time. In fact, so much coastal land has been lost already. So I think, yeah, I feel like I didn't have a choice about it. It was where I was and who I was.
I also studied literature. And so a lot of my instinctive passion is around narratives and how to disrupt destructive and violent narratives that are taking place across my continent and around the world.
Maggie Mapondera, Zimbabwean activist and communication coordinator at Women African Alliance, got her start in community support work by working with survivors of sexual violence in different communities, and from there began working with rural communities impacted by climate crises.
Initially, a lot of the work that I was doing was around sex and sexual violence and body, the body as territory. and understanding the violations that are happening between people in communities, mainly urban communities. And then I started to work with rural communities that are impacted by mining and other big extractive activities, and seeing the degree of violence that was taking place on people, and particularly on women, and also on the land, and how communities would often express that violence as very much linked in their experience and understanding of what was going on to them, and this entire logic of extractivism, of violence, of destruction, of domination, and how that is playing out on women's bodies and is also playing out on our territories, on land, forests, water. And yeah, I became really sort of intrigued and enraged by what I was seeing and what I was hearing and what people were facing, and wanted to find a way to support that work, support those voices. So much of that trauma is silenced or erased from this dominant narrative of development, which we are taught to see as good and as something that we should want on the African continent. But actually, the reality of it is one of violence and destruction and negation of so many people and so many histories of so much. And so denial was never an option. And that's where my passion comes from.
A third story followed Maponderas, and it was that of Maria Alejandra Escalante, a climate activist from Colombia working at FRIDA, the Young Feminist Fund.
Over the period as I was growing up, I began seeing and understanding much more of the already felt effects of climate change, especially in rural and peasant communities, who 20 years ago didn't quite understand why were their crops being so diminished, why the rain wasn't coming, and how that translated to the sustainability of their own livelihoods, how to carry on basic living without your main income, without your main possibility of connection with nature. So I think observing those changes in a very quick pace pushed me to study in an academic way a lot of climate, food, and environmental policy. I did a lot of research in rural areas with peasant communities, especially rural women, who are currently organizing on many fronts, trying to defend land on many ways, trying to get access to land, rights to land, trying to stop extractive industries from entering their territories, while at the same time trying to cope with the unprecedented effects of climate change in these areas. And to me, seeing the resistance of especially these women, of youth as well, who resist the fact that they have to leave their space, their environments, their ecologies for another livelihood because the system is pushing them to do so, has been really inspiring and key to my understanding of the role that I can play uplifting this work of resistance, this work of creating alternatives in these areas.
Maria Alejandra Escalante. Next came the story of Patricia Watimena, an indigenous woman from Heruku Island, Indonesia, working at the Asia-Pacific Forum on Women, Law, and Development. Watimena's desire to pursue climate work came from two opposite words, the first being anger and the second being hope.
What led me to this work, I guess, would be anger. And I think I'm still angry now. Angry seeing my own community and many indigenous communities are deprived of their rights to land, natural resources, because their environments is basically destroyed by the current climate crisis, and how badly affected they are. How corporate plunder and capitalism is actually destroying our communities and the world that we are living in. But at the same time, I see hope, and that's what keeps me going. Hope that actually comes from the resilience, the resistance, the relentless struggles of so many indigenous women in many, many, many corners of this world. they have been challenging the oppressive development and economic system to defend their forests, their natural resources for generations. Like many, many Berta Cáceres and Greta Thunberg I met in so many indigenous communities I've visited or I lived with, including my own. They are the very reason why I'm here today, because some of us are actually privileged enough to be able to speak out, but also to amplify even just the voices of these people in the community. And the struggles of the women is actually the fuel that keeps me going.
Patricia Watimena. The final story came from Francis Roberts Gregory, based in New Orleans, Louisiana, United States. Roberts Gregory now works on the Feminist Agenda for a Green New Deal coalition and is a Northeastern University faculty fellow.
I am descendant from sharecroppers, field hands, and folk who are of African descent displaced in diaspora. And so I actually come from three environmental justice communities, but I didn't realize this until I went to college. So I went to Spelman College, a historically Black college and university in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's also one of the few institutions for women of African descent in the United States. I participated in the Women in Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math program. So I was an environmental science major. I was tracked a particular way. I really found that the curriculum was limited in the sense of not focusing on the intersections of different disciplines, but also just like the social dimensions of ecological issues, conflicts, politics. I think I was a junior or senior when I actually stumbled across literature around gender and climate change. And I remember wanting to write my senior thesis on this intersection and being told by the head of the department, a man of color, that that was not a worthy topic of study. And that really rubbed me the wrong way. And I eventually switched my major to sociology and anthropology in order to lift up the narratives of women of color and our solutions for environmental, energy, and climate justice. I should also state that when I was in graduate school at the University of California, Berkeley, I actually facilitated a workshop at the annual Empowering Women of Color Conference to demystify science and increase the confidence of women in STEM, because although a lot of women literally major in biology, chemistry, physics, a lot of times we don't confidently identify as scientists. So that means we don't apply for funding, we self-select out of positions, we're not mentoring the next generation of environmental scientists and climate leaders. So I figured that as someone who's passionate about mentorship, this would be my intervention. Finally, I would just say that over time, due to the influence of different mentors who conduct participatory action research or community-based research, I decided to focus on how women of color in Gulf Coast, Louisiana advocate for climate justice, but also resist environmental racism. And I became a feminist climate activist myself. And then back in 2017, I attended the People's Climate Movement March in DC, where there were indigenous and Black women leading the conversation in the United States around climate change and justice. And I was like, "That this is it. This is what I need to focus on." And then also I attended the UPROSE Youth Climate Justice Summit and realized the importance of mentoring the next generation of climate leaders. So there's many other entry points, but I'll just leave it there.
You're listening to the Women's International News Gathering Service, WINGS, featuring clips from a virtual discussion called Radical Futures Roundtable, Young Climate Feminists in Conversation, hosted by WEDO. Now, a look at the type of radical futures these panelists say are possible. Moderator Andrea Vega Troncoso posed this question to panelists after they shared their stories.
What does a radical feminist future look like? Not just getting at the structure and the systemic aspects of it, but also like, what would this feel like living in it every day?
I imagine a radical future where we avoid the climate catastrophe. We work together. We had the means, we had the will to stop it.
Maria Alejandra Escalante.
I imagine a radical future where the political and economical structures are not serving the few, but the many, and are not based in a capitalist, extractive, profit-driven world. I am not sure how to call that, but I think it's very important to imagine a world that exists beyond what we have understood is needed to run the world. And obviously, I think that is a world fossil fuel free, where we have understood that energy sovereignty can come in so many other ways, symbiotic ways with the world. And I like to imagine a world where we are stepping away from this colonial, rational way of putting everything into binaries, into women, men, into nature, society, into all these dichotomies, which I think leave very little room for imagination to bloom. I want to step away from monocrops in general, from all types of systems that want to streamline by efficiency or by profit, want to destroy diversity. And I mean that also in terms of the gender diversity that exists within our many societies and that have been erased, silenced, policed, and violated into so many ways. And I imagine a radical future in which we step away from the fact that we think that there's binaries to contain us, our emotions, our bodies, our expressions, our systems.
In the work that I do, I know that safe, peace, and equal societies don't need growth or productivity or these obscene levels of wealth that we're seeing with billionaires profiting off this pandemic and this global level of suffering right now.
Climate feminist writer and researcher Sanam Amin.
I love to think of a world where we can have these incredible social safety nets that makes it possible for everyone to have healthcare and education, and not insufferable learning where you hate school, but like interactive and creative and beautiful, that integrates our traditions, our languages, our cultures, and to bring back the traditions of smallholder farming and recognizing Indigenous communities' roles in that, of course, to grow our food sustainably for a fair wage so that our forests, our waterways can recover from these generations of extractivism and pollution. I also, you know, in relation to labor organizing and the worries that some people have about the future of work and digitization, I see a world where formal work is a choice according to our interest and our talent and not a necessity for accessing survival wages or for healthcare. That's unjust, and that always puts the weakest and most vulnerable communities in the worst position. And in that future that I see, where we have equality, where we've broken up these binaries, families are people who love each other, who come together. It doesn't matter what gender they identify, how they dress, how they present themselves, what bathrooms we allocate. Although I do want more bathrooms for women and more pockets in our dresses, because that's also symptoms of capitalism and patriarchy. And I just want automation to make it easier for people to work less and have more joy and creativity, as Maria Alejandra was describing.
Radical feminist future to me is a world that gives justice to people.
Patricia Watimena of the Asia-Pacific Forum on Women, Law, and Development focuses on holding those who caused climate change accountable and creating systems where women can lead the change.
I really imagine a world where women, the most marginalized and most oppressed women groups, are able to seek accountability for every single right violation that they experience, where every Indigenous woman are able to speak out when their forests are destroyed, their natural resources are grabbed, where the free, prior, and informed consent of Indigenous women is obtained, including within their very own community, where the perpetrators, and in this context, the polluters, the main actors who actually cause climate crisis, are accountable to the injustice that they cause. the world actually being now in climate crisis, you know, how they are actually contributing to all these damages. I think I want them to be accountable for what they're doing, and all the deepening inequality and injustices that's faced and experienced by women. For those who destroy our planet, we need to name and shame. We need to demand them to be accountable to the massive destruction that brings women into poverty. For me, radical feminist future would be where economies actually work for the women and not the women working for the capitalist neoliberal economic system.
I would love a future where we can all breathe and where no child is born with bronchitis or asthma or other sorts of diseases that are affecting their lungs and their capacity to breathe.
Maggie Mapondera, Zimbabwean activist and communication coordinator at Women African Alliance, describes a future where people are not born with respiratory illnesses caused by poor environments, and everyone is able to participate in restoring the relationships with nature. Mapondera argues that this is a radical future.
I would love a world where we can all eat and where the people who are responsible for growing our food, we are all participating in that exercise. We are all part of that chain. Our relationship to nature is restored, a relationship that capitalism works so hard to destroy. I would love a future where we can be free from violence, and violence in all its many, many forms, whether it is physical or sexual or the violence of work. Someone was mentioning earlier, I think it was Sanam, reimagining work, what it means. And there's so much violence that we can do to ourselves if we are trapped in this cycle of capitalist notions of how we use our time, how we use our labor, how we labor. So I would love to be free from that.
Finally, United States climate feminist and educator Frances Roberts Gregory details a future where not only are oppressive systems changed to include new food systems, new work requirements and wages, equitable healthcare, and more, but finished off with a consideration about how that future can be achieved. And it starts with education and leveling the playing field for vulnerable or marginalized communities.
You know, everyone should be exposed to environmental education, no matter if they live in a community that pays, at least in the United States, pays higher, it has higher property taxes, or whether you live in affordable housing. I think housing is really important. I grew up in public housing. And right now we're dealing with people who are getting evicted during disasters, hurricane season. I don't want to see that in a feminist future. And then I think, particularly based on my experience here in the United States, just the need to decriminalize folk who are protecting water, decriminalize folk who are activists, because we're going to still need activists in the future. And oftentimes women are environmental activists. Also, defunding of police, reallocating those funds to economies of care, and also ensuring that our legal system is able to actually bring about justice. Like right now in the United States, we're all like terrified about who's going to be on the Supreme Court. You know, like it shouldn't be that if one person passes away, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that now we're not sure if we're going to have progressive laws and policies. Like that's unacceptable. And yeah, finally, rethinking borders. I think in a feminist future, we need to rethink borders because everyone won't have the luxury to stay in the place where their ancestors were born. A lot of these geographies are already disappearing, like here in Louisiana and also other coastal areas around the world, island nation states. So making space for people to relocate, migrate safely, and also that they don't have to worry about sterilization or the kidnapping of their children at these camps, at the borders that currently exist. So defunding police, demilitarizing police, I think is really important for a feminist future.
In terms of these radical feminist futures, are they a possibility? According to WeDo panel moderator Mara Dolan and the virtual audience, the answer is a resounding yes. Dolan describes her feelings about the work being put into creating these futures by young climate feminists and why they need support to continue to grow in their work.
We know that young climate feminists are putting in work. We know that in the last year, in the last 2 years in which we've seen these unbelievable global strikes and marches and direct action and communities mobilizing, so often young climate feminists are at the forefront of that, right? Leading the climate justice movement, but they're often so invisible in figuring out who to consider the true leaders of these movements and of this change. And I think I can't remember the last time that I saw a panel like this of young feminists from big moments like COP or Climate Week or even months like March, which is Women's History Month. We so very rarely see these gatherings of young climate feminists who are coming together in conversation to talk about the work that they do. So just having a lot of gratitude for this space and recognizing that young climate feminists, of which you all are so included, are really leading this work, and that I think it's so important to visibilize that in really clear and powerful ways. And part of that is also because of intersecting crises of not only the climate crisis, but this pandemic and uprisings against white supremacy and colonialism around the world. I think all of this so often has these really visible and deeply felt effects on our bodies and on ourselves and on our work. And we rarely talk about that. And I think we talk about that sometimes in the form of what self-care is, but it goes beyond that as well.
Today you heard highlights from the September 25th, 2020, Women's Environment and Development Organization Discussion, Radical Futures Roundtable, Young Climate Feminists in Conversation. The panel ended with expressions of hope and resolves to continue feminist climate activism until those radical futures are achieved. You heard from experts Sanam Amin, a feminist environmentalist, activist, writer, and researcher, Maggie Mapondera, the communications coordinator at Women African Alliance, Patricia Watimena from the organization Asia Pacific Forum on Women, Law, and Development, Maria Alejandra Escalante, the climate justice lead at Frida the Young Feminist Fund, and Frances Roberts Gregory from Feminist Agenda for a Green New Deal Coalition and a Northeastern University Future Faculty Fellow. The discussion was moderated by Mara Dolan and Andrea Vega Troncoso. I'm Sofia Vavaroutsos, reporting for Wings.
Video of the 81-minute Radical Futures discussion can be found on the website wedo.org. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Our new website is wingsradio.org/wordpress, and our daily news feed is at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose new online events can be found through the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.